morning, so let me start briefly recapitulating what we have done yesterday. So we started discussing Maxwell's theory, and it's a very good prototype of any classical field theory you can think about. And I'm repeating this because, as I said, basically everything that happens in Maxwell's theory happens also in general relativity, and so you'll be ready for the next course. Okay, so these are the famous Maxwell equations. Maxwell formulated in 1860. Basically, the only addition he added to already known results was this extra piece over here. But the existence of that extra piece has far-reaching consequences. The charge conservation follows then from the Maxwell equations. You predict that actually there are solutions even in the absence of sources. You predict electromagnetic waves, and you predict their speed. And so unify light with electromagnetism. But you also, once you have these equations, they break the standard Galilean invariance. And so they have a different kind of symmetry. They have the Lorentz invariant symmetry. They are Lorentz invariant. And so immediately you can go to special relativity and so on. Anyway, so then there is a convenient tool at the classical level how to start solving these equations. And starting at these equations and using some identities, you will see that if I introduce new variables, phi and vector a, and then I expressed b as a curl of a, then there's a beautiful identity. The divergence of curl is always zero, so the equation 4 will be automatically satisfied. So similarly, then if I plug this over here, let's do it differently. So then I can define E in terms of a new function, gradient of phi, and then dA over dt. And then if you plug this expression over here and use that the curl of the gradient is equal to zero, so this thing actually does not contribute to the curl here. And then you plug for B curl of A, you will see that the equation 2 is automatically satisfied, right? So we have solved half of the equations by simply introducing this phi and a, and we also gain the fact that instead of having to deal with six variables e and b, we are now dealing with variables phi and a. But surprise, surprise! Actually, this phi and a can still be, some components of these can be killed by the fact that there is a gauge freedom to these. And so if I do this transformation where lambda is an arbitrary function, then my E and B remain unchanged. And in particular, you can impose various gauges. And the one which we will use today is this Lorentz gauge, which is very convenient for what we are going to do today. All right. So this is what we have done yesterday. So now, of course, what still remains to be solved is the equations with the sources. So we still need to solve the equation 1, and we still need to solve the equation 3, right? So let's do that now. So let's start with 3, equation 3. And so let's look at how this equation looks in terms of the new variables. So we have divergence of E, and that is equal to divergence of minus gradient phi minus dA over dt. And that's, of course, equal to 4 pi rho. But we can also use our gauge condition here, right? So what we really see here is two terms. So we have minus nabla square on phi. Sometimes I'll be writing a Laplace. So you can write nabla square or you can write Laplace, doesn't matter. So you have minus Laplace on phi. And then we have minus d over dt, divergence of a equals to 4 pi rho. And then if I use this Lorentz gauge condition, I can express divergence of A in terms of minus dt of phi. So this thing here will be minus dt of phi. And we have a beautiful result that basically the equation 3 rewrites as box on phi equals to minus 4 pi rho, where again the box is minus d square over dt square plus Laplace operator over here. So we have a nice wave equation for the potential phi upon using the Lorentz gauge condition. So we solved equation 3. So the last equation which we need to solve is equation 1. Equation 1. So we have curl of B. So B is curl of A. And then minus d over dt. E is minus gradient of phi minus dA over dt equals to 4 pi j. So that's our equation number 1. So now we can use again the beautiful identity of this double curl thing. And that is equal to gradient of divergence of A and then minus Laplace on A. So this is that. And then it's minus what is it I'm doing here? Minus d over dt minus gradient phi minus dA over dt 4 pi j. And okay, very good. So then again I can use the Lorentz gauge condition. And well, how do I do that? So I have gradient, divergence of gradient of A. Okay, so I take a piece from, well, gradient probably from here, and then I take a piece from here. And so what I really have here is I can swap the dt and the gradient here. So I'll have a gradient of d over dt of phi. And if I eliminate that, so this guy here is a plus gradient d phi over dt. D phi over dt is a divergence of A. So this is a gradient of divergence of A with a minus sign. Okay. And then you see that this term over here is precisely this time over here. So now it's becoming very messy. Anyway, so what the result is that basically we get the same wave equation for A, but now is this source over here. Everybody happy with the calculation? That's why I started with 3, it's a little bit simpler. Still two-line calculation. So anyway, so that's amazing, right? So now we basically, you know, transformed all these, you know, 8 equations, 1, 2, 3, 4, for 6 variables E and B, into the wave equation for phi with the corresponding source, wave equation for A with the corresponding source. But remember, we used the Lorentz gauge. So that's another equation which you have to actually be imposing. So the statement is this plus the wave equations are equivalent to your Maxwell equations. Right, so never forget about the Lorentz gauge condition. Of course, if I impose different gauge, I'll get different equations than the wave equation. I'll get more complicated equation. So really, this plus that equals to that. All right, and so then you may recall what you know about solutions of the wave equation and so on. And you know that if you have equation with the right-hand side, you can always write the general solution as a special solution So you just find one special A which solves this equation for given J. But then you can add to that special A, you add any A which solves a homogeneous equation without the right-hand side. So box on A homogeneous equals to zero, and then this will be your general solution, right? And so typically that will capture some waves and, you know, propagate in your, right, okay. Very good. So now, for the rest of the lecture, I will try to solve these equations, the wave equations. But before, we can practice on electrostatics. Okay, so let's practice on electrostatics. So first, consider electrostatics. Which means that your fields are time independent. And if you look at your equation, and of course nothing depends on time, so phi is a function of x only. And then, you know, the first term, the d square over dt square in the box, simply zero. And so then you have an equation, and Laplace on phi is equal to minus 4 pi rho. Okay? So this is the equation which we'll be solving. You can also have the corresponding equation for A, but let's just, of course, the solution will be exactly the same. So let's look at this equation here. And let's, yes?
Is it possible that the gauge could be time dependent, but the fields could not be?
I don't know. Is it? I mean, you can always come up with a gauge, you know, with time-dependent lambda, right? Yeah. So hence, it's also possible that I could have phi, which is time-dependent, but e, which is time-independent, and stuff like that. So that's definitely possible. But what is also possible is that probably you can, you know, gauge away that time-dependence. So yeah. So let's just consider phi as a function of x. And so let's consider a very complicated problem, which is called Dirichlet problem. And then consider Dirichlet problem. And let's try to solve that. And you'll see that it's quite complicated, actually. So what is Dirichlet problem? Is that, you know, you have some domain here. Let's call it omega. And then in that domain, omega, you know, there can be some charges, so on. So there's some, you know, charge distribution described by charge density rho. And then you are interested in finding, you know, what the phi here in that domain is everywhere, right? So you are interested what is the corresponding electrostatic potential by, you know, produced by these charges present in the domain. But you also know that, you know, there's a boundary to this domain, d omega. And on that boundary, you prescribe, you know, what phi has to be equal to. So you say that, you know, there's some, you know, phi zero, well, on that boundary, okay? So we have we fix phi equal to phi zero on d omega. Okay, so not only we are solving this equation here inside the domain, but we are also saying, well, on the boundary we want something to happen, right? And so that's an additional condition that's called Dirichlet problem. So typically you need to provide some conditions for, you know, for what you want for the solutions of these equations to be. So here the conditions are fix phi on the boundary. Okay, so that's our problem. And this problem is, they say, relatively complicated. Let's solve it in three steps. Okay, and you will see how beautiful the solution is in the end. So, so step number one. So let's pretend that we have a much simpler problem, that we have just one charge, and that charge is sitting in the free space. Okay, so we have basically a picture like this. Q equal to 1, and then we have empty space here, empty space here. And then we want to basically, you know, solve Laplace on phi corresponding to this, you know, charge density just produced by this one charge over here. And of course, you know, the solution is just the Coulomb law, whatever, right? So let's derive the Coulomb law by using strange method of Green's function. Okay, so the statement is that, you know, we have this equation over here, you know, with this charge distribution, and let's try to seek phi in terms of the Green function. So let's seek phi in of Green's function. So we will be seeking that phi at, you know, some radius r, and we'll be writing that is equal to minus 4 pi an integral, let's call the corresponding Green's function g3. It will depend on r, it will depend on r0, and there's a distribution at r0 and d3 R0. Okay, so this is our ansatz for phi, and we just say, well, provided we know the charge distribution rho, this G3 better give us the solution when we get it by, you know, integrating out over the distribution of charges. Okay, and so then the statement is, well, yes.
What is the subscript 3?
It stands for number of dimensions. Okay, the three-dimensional Green function. Of course, the Green function will depend on, you know, how many dimensions you have. So you know that the potential of a point charge goes like 1 over r in our space-time dimension. But if you go to higher dimensions, it will go like 1 over r squared, I think, something like that. So you know, this is dimension dependent. Also, this is a three-dimensional, 3D free space Green function. Okay. Okay, very good. So we seek solution like that, and then the statement is, well, we can write the solution in this way, provided, so this will work. The statement, this will work, provided the G3 satisfies the following equation. Okay, so that's the statement. So let's prove it. The proof is super simple. So proof this. Well, okay. So we better, you know, satisfy the equation for the phi written over here, this equation, with that source q equal to 1. Okay? And so if we calculate what Laplace on phi is, well, it's given by minus 4 pi. So now remember the Laplace acts on r. So I can pull it through because this is an integral over r0. Right, so I can pull Laplace operator into the integral, but then the only thing which depends on r is the g3, right? Everything else is a function of r0, right? So then this is 4 pi integral Laplace on g3, x only like that, and then I have rho r0 d3 r0. But then, by definition, if you want, Laplace on G3 is just delta function. So this is just delta r minus r0, as we are looking above that. And so now we can happily do the integration over r0 and just replace everywhere r0 with r. And so this obviously is equal to minus 4 pi rho at r, right? So it certainly satisfies our equation. If we seek it, you know, in this way. So now what this G3 is, well, as I say, it's a Coulomb law, so it must be like 1 over R. So let's just do it. Let's just prove. So G3 related to potential of point charge. And the way to calculate it, well, you can take any region omega and integrate your equation Laplace on G3 dV. Okay. So this is a divergence of gradient of G3 dV. That's what Laplace is. And then we use the Stokes theorem to turn it so we have some integral over omega of d of something, so that better be equal to that something over d of omega. Okay, like the Stokes theorem, d omega and then g3, but now this is a surface integral. Okay, sorry, happy?
Yeah,
okay, very good. So now, of course, everything is spherically symmetric here, right? So if I choose my coordinates, you know, to be sitting where the charge is sitting, well, everything will be nice and, you know, whatever. And there'll be only radial field coming from the charge, right? So everything depends only, well, I'm writing here G3 is a function of R minus R0, but what G3 really is, so G3 of R and R0, in fact, it must be G3 of R minus R0. And it actually has to depend only on their difference. But anyway, so it's a function of R minus R0. And let's call that capital R. And that's because everything is spherically symmetric around that point. Okay. So then if I use the corresponding spherical coordinates for my spherical symmetry, this gradient is very, very simple. Right, so this thing here will only depend on R, and so the gradient will have only non-trivial component in the R direction. Right, so then this integral over d omega, and then it will be dg3 over the R, or the magnitude of that, and there will be corresponding ds. And so if I have a sphere of radius capital R, then what is the ds is 4 pi, it's R square d cosine theta d phi, right? So that's what the ds is, okay? So now I can happily do this integral. It just gives me 4 pi. So this is 4 pi R square dg3 over dr. But I still haven't used my definition of what the g3 really is, right? Yes?
Sorry, I just think I missed a step. Is the ds equals r squared d cos theta d phi, assuming we're on the sphere? Or?
So what we are really doing is this picture over here, right? So we are choosing a sphere of the radius r, right? So now our d omega is precisely, you know, the surface of that sphere. So that's what d omega is, right? So the volume element on that surface of the sphere is actually r squared d cosine theta d phi, right? But also, you know, the surface has a normal going in that direction, which projects everything into the r direction. So that's why we are writing r without any vector c and things and so on. So. Does it answer your question? You look happy. Okay, that's good. Okay, so that's what it is. But we still haven't used the fact that the Laplace on G3 is actually a delta function. So let's use it now. So this is equal to an integral of omega of the delta function r minus r0 dv0 or whatever. And so, of course, that is 1. Right? So then we have an equation, basically, from here. We have an equation that 1 equals to 4 pi r squared dg3 over dr. And you can integrate it, or you can just believe me, the solution is just minus 1 over 4 pi, 1 over r. Or if you want, you can write it like that. Everybody happy. We just derived the Coulomb's law. Isn't that amazing? So very good. So we now know how to solve the Laplace equation for one charge, right? And in empty space. Well, that's a good improvement, but that's not what we want. We want many charges. And we, moreover, want to impose some boundary data, right? So that's a much more complicated problem than just having one charge and empty space, right? So then, step 2. Before I go there, everybody happy so far, right? Yes.
So just sort of to summarize, this Green's function method in the abstract works by applying your differential operator to your thing and making it a delta function, and you can integrate that out?
That's basically, yeah. So you know, this can be generalized, so, you know, whatever the equation you want to solve, you'll have some differential operator acting on your phi or whatever equals to something. So then the Green's method basically works like I take the same differential operator acting on Green's function, but now I'll just put a delta-like source. I'll just put like one charge there. And so this is a definition of what you know, the Green function basically is. Okay, so we have step 1. Step 2, Green's identities. Sounds very mysterious. We will have 2 identities, and you will see that both of them are very trivial. So, okay, so now consider 2, you know, functions, phi and chi. And so then you may be looking at what the integral over omega is if you take a divergence of a vector which is given by phi gradient chi dv. Okay? So chi is a scale function, phi is a scale function. If I take a gradient of chi, I will get a vector. And now this I'm taking the divergence of that vector. Yes?
Phi and chi represents?
Here they are just, you know, some functions. Consider phi chi functions, some functions. We will then specify, you know, what these functions are later on so that it actually works for our purpose, okay? Right? But at this point they are just 2 arbitrary functions. Right. Very good. So now this is great. First of all, we can use, again, the Stokes theorem. Okay, let me write somewhere the Stokes theorem again. So the Stokes theorem is omega d of omega is d of omega of omega. So you always have an integration of boundary of something equals to integral inside that that boundary of d of omega, whatever that means. Okay, So let's use that. So again, so we have divergence of some vector. We can kill the divergence by making this a surface integral, d omega of phi blah blah chi times the surface integral ds. Okay, so that's the Stokes theorem. But at the same time, we can just use the standard Leibniz rule. So we have a derivative here acting on 2 things. So we can actually differentiate first this one and then second one. Yes?
Would it be true
trivial, but I think this is called divergence theorem or Gauss's theorem.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Because the Stokes theorem is the one that curl of something becomes the,
There is only one Stokes theorem, which is this one. and then everything else is a trivial consequence of that. Okay? So you will see that. No, but you are right. You are absolutely right. Right? So you know, different people came up with these different identities. But you know, then there is a general result, which is the one I'm writing over there. And then you can write all these up cases as a special case of that. But you're absolutely right. Yes. Thanks. Very good. So we have that. So now we just do. So this is the Stokes or Gauss. Did you say Gauss? Okay, let's put Gauss. Okay, we have Gauss, and then we have Leibniz. So we just differentiate, you know, the first one. So it's an integral of omega, and then you know you have gradient of phi, and then it's the scalar product with gradient of psi, whatever that means, dV. We differentiate the first one and left the second one untouched. And then we have another term, omega of chi, and then lambda square on chi of dv. So we differentiate the second one. Very good. So this trivial result is called first Green's identity. Okay. Or first Green's identity. Okay, one remark. There is nothing wrong with this notation over here. So you're writing like, so there's a vector gradient of chi, and you're taking a scalar product is a vector of the surface integral. And of course, the surface, the surface element has a normal to that surface, so it's a vector. And then it has d of that, you know, surface area or whatever, right? So let's say that you know this ds. Okay. So there should be like a vector here and there's a vector here. But of course I can write ds vector as you know some normal. And then ds, which would be the standard, you know, area thing here. So then if you have, so note. That what we need to calculate over here is a gradient chi times ds, right? And so then if I express that in terms of this thing here, it will be gradient chi times this vector n and then ds, right? But what this thing here is like I'm taking a derivative in the direction of n. Right, so I can also write this as lambda n of chi ds, or sometimes people write something horrible, and that's this thing here. Maybe you've seen this. Ds. Let me use this notation. It's used in statistical physics, and it's used in. But anyway, so what you know what it means is that I'm really taking it. I'm taking a gradient. This is the best notation. You're taking a gradient of chi, and you're multiplying that gradient understood as a vector with the direction n, right? Or sometimes they say, well, we differentiate chi in the direction of n, right? And so they write even the vector here. anyway, so horrible notation. So let's use it, OK? So very good. So then, of course, I can write it over here. As you know, this d chi over dn, and then I would just have normal ds without the scalar product there. Okay. So now, very good. So we have one identity, which is this equals to that. And then, you know, take that equation again, but now swap phi and chi. Okay, now swap. Phi with chi and subtract the two things. Okay. So then what do I have, right? So I have this term over here. I have an integral over d omega. And I have phi d chi over dm. And then I'm subtracting the same thing, but this phi and chi replaced. So it's minus chi d phi dm. And then normal ds. Right? Then I would have the second term here. So now I'm subtracting the term where I swap phi and chi. But of course, it's the same thing, right? So this is this, you know, it doesn't matter where I put this guy. I can put it here and put this one first. So it's the same term. So it's equal to 0. And then I have a term plus omega phi Laplace on chi minus chi Laplace on phi dv. Okay, so that's our result. And this, again, trivial result is called second Green's identity. Okay. So that was tough mass. Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry. This is very pedantic, but on the volume integral of the delta there.
Yes.
It's the three-dimensional delta function, right?
Yeah. Of course, it's just three-dimensional. I think here is in three dimensions, right? So the G3 is in three dimensions. So the delta function in the definition of the G3, that one there, is a three-dimensional delta function. Thanks. I should have stressed that. That's very good. Okay, very good. So we have this, you know, mathematical identity. And, you know, your friend mathematician gave you this beautiful identity. In this case, it was green. And then let's apply it to our specific problem, to our specific case. So let's now apply this for phi equals to our phi, which we want to solve for. And then chi equals to G3. Okay. So these are now our specific functions which we want to apply this for. Okay, so what do we get? So we get d of omega, and now phi is phi, and then d G3 over dn. And then minus G3 d phi over dn ds equals to integral over omega phi Laplace on G3 minus G3 Laplace on phi dv. And just put it there. But I know what Laplace on G3 is, right? So this thing here is just a delta function. Okay. So what I should be really doing here doesn't matter. I should be doing dv0. Doesn't matter, right? I can call it whatever I want. It's symmetric anyway. So then this thing here, I can immediately integrate that. And, you know, killing the integral of v0, just evaluating phi at the point r. So the first term here just gives me phi of r. Second, I know what Laplace on phi is. Well, I want to satisfy my equation. It's minus 4 pi rho, right? So this thing here over here is minus 4 pi rho. And so then, if you look at all this, I have a beautiful formula for phi of r. All right, so I have a beautiful formula. So phi of r equals to, well, this thing is minus, so it's plus, but I put it on the other side, so minus 4 pi integral rho g3 dv0, and then plus d omega. Phi dg3 over dn plus minus g3 d phi over dn ds. Right? So that's our beautiful formula, which we just derived for phi. Seems like victory. It's not quite yet, but it will be soon, OK? So why it seems like a victory, right? So we can write the solution of our problem. So phi of r, you know, as some volume integral of the over the charge density, and then we know what g3 is. We just calculated it. So this is all known, and we can do the integral at least in principle, right? And then, well, all we need to know for that is, you know, the value of phi on the boundary, which is over here. We know what that is, so that's fine. But aha, there's a problem here. What we also need to know, well, we know g3, but what we don't know is d phi over dn. So we don't know, but can we actually know?
Like we know g3 only for the point charge case, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for like a general charge distribution, we still don't know what g is.
Yeah, but what enters here, so remember, you know, we were just plugging everywhere g3. So really, this g3 is the g3 which we derive. Okay, it's just the g3 for empty space and one point particle. So that's what g3 is. So we know it. It's over there.
For the general charge distribution, this will also work?
Well, it seems that it almost works, right? I'm just telling you, well, yeah, you just integrate over rho, and you have these boundary terms over here. So it almost works, except this thing here. Do we know d phi over dn on the boundary? We don't know that. Can we know it?
The boundary condition.
It would be a boundary condition. Can we know it? Can we impose it? What do you think? Can we impose it?
The field on the boundary, right?
Exactly. So you know, we considering the boundary value problem, where phi equals to phi 0 on the boundary, right? Can we also impose what d phi over dn, what the derivative of phi on the boundary is? Can't do that, right? It would be too many boundary data. It's like prescribing q and q dot on both of your boundaries, right? And we can't do that. Right? You can only prescribe the delta, you know, delta q is 0, but not delta q dot is 0 on the boundaries. It'd be too many boundary data, the first tutorial, right? So we don't know this, but we also cannot know, because this would be, you know, ill-posed. Right? So it seems that we have a nice integral expression for phi. However, the integral expression is useless because, you know, it would require that. And this cannot be done. So now this relates very much to your question, which you asked. Well, you said, well, g3 probably not good. OK, let's upgrade g3 to something better. OK. So the last step, step three. We like our formula very much. So we want to basically keep it as much as we can. But we don't want this term over here. How can we arrange that? Well, we arrange for that if g3, if you replace, so step three, we go from g3 to some g, which is called a Dirichlet Green function. Okay. And so what we will be requiring is that this term vanishes, right? So that we don't need to impose d phi over the n, right? How can we make it vanish? Is that if we replace g3 with g, and we require that g vanishes on the boundary, then this term will not be there, okay? So what we require is that this g is defined such that, similar to g3, you know, this is delta r minus r0, But what we also require is that G on d omega is equal to zero. So that will vanish that term over there. And what you can also show or whatever is that the G is something like G3 plus some harmonic thing where this is zero. And what you require is that this H is actually finite at R0. Okay, so that's a definition of what you want from the Dirichlet-Green function, that it satisfies these three properties, that it's a Green function still satisfying this. In addition, it vanishes on the boundary, and the fact that you can express it as G3, well, it will satisfy that, plus the harmonic part, which is finite at R0. Yes?
Is it a function still of R minus R0, or is it not? Like,
what do you think? So this guy is, right? But does this guy have to be? I don't know. Maybe not.
You could have imposed. So we could have said that the two terms there, the one with the plus sign and the other with the minus sign, just vanish. So you could probably apply with something, a function that would not vanish on its own on the boundary, but the two terms there would vanish together.
Well, that is true, but you know, you want to solve this for any phi on the boundary. So you want to be able to prescribe any phi on the boundary, right? So for that any phi, it wouldn't be very useful, right? Because it would have to be for different boundary conditions. Well, maybe that's right. For different boundary conditions, you would have different G, and that's still true here. Interesting idea. I don't know. Maybe. So anyway, if we can find this miracles, find this G, then we have solved the problem, and phi of R is simply minus 4 pi integral of G rho dV0, and then plus d omega phi dG over dN. Yes. Okay? So that's your prescription for phi. Okay? So we now know what we need to do. We just need to find G, which satisfies all these properties, which I just wrote down. And typically, you know, this G will be constructed out of G3s. But in a very clever way. So, yes?
What happened to the H? Like, why don't we have rho H dV0?
No, I'm just writing. So what I'm doing here is that I'm replacing in that upper formula, I'm replacing G3 with the new G.
Which is G minus H.
Which, the new G is G3 plus some H. So you could plug it in terms of H if you want. But I'm just writing in terms of G. I'm not substituting G3 equals to G minus H, okay? I'm just upgrading my formula. So this is an upgrade rather than substitution. Maybe you can still substitute, I don't know. But this is an upgrade of previous formula. And then, you know, how will you prove that this is a good upgrade is that, you know, you can use the Green's identity, second Green's identity, but now, you know, for phi equal to phi and psi or whatever, psi equal to g. And then you can go through the proof and you will see that this is the right thing. Okay, so now how to construct this? So to construct g, there's a powerful or interesting or I don't know, some good description, powerful method, that's called method of images, and so let me just trying to give you an example. So, and you will do many more examples in today's tutorial. So let's imagine that what we want to do is that, you know, we have a point charge here, Q. And so we know what the corresponding potential would be of this charge satisfying our Laplace equation. But now we make our problem more complicated. We say, well, we actually put this close to a conducting plate. So this is a conducting plate. And we require, well, that this conducting plate is held at phi equal to 0. So now we have basically like the Dirichlet condition. Of course, we want that at infinity, very, very far away from the charge, phi vanishes as well, right? But we also require that at finite distance from this charge q, it vanishes on the conductor. So this conductor goes like forever, right? It's an infinite conductor, okay? Infinite plate. Just to simplify our life, right? So let's say this charge is at a distance d from this plate. And let's say this is our z direction. So you could assign r0 to that charge would be 0, 0, and d as a vector. Okay? 0, 0, and d. So we have the Dirichlet problem, where we require that phi on d omega is equal to 0. So phi at, so this will be z equal to 0. So z equal to 0, which is the plate, is equal to 0. And that's phi at infinity also has to vanish. Right? And then also, of course, what we require is that Laplace on phi is minus q r minus r0, where the r0 is just 0, 0, and d. Okay, so now if we can find, yes?
Quick question on the setup. So if So we've got a point charge q, which is some distance from this plate. Is it a plane like coming out of the board? Like...
Yeah, exactly. So you would have a charge like that, and you would have a plate like that. And the plate would be extended to everywhere. And the charge is sitting here. You're holding this on phi equal to 0. And then you are asking, what is the potential everywhere here on this, you know, to the right side of the plane or whatever. So the question is, what is phi here? Phi. Yes? Yes, of course. Thank you. Is it? Probably. Okay. Thank you. Minus 4 pi q. Okay. So very good. So now we know that the solution of this problem is precisely given by this formula over here, right? Where rho is simple. It's just, you know, the delta function times q. So all we need to know is to find the g, right? This Dirichlet g. Okay, so we need g, which satisfies the same boundary data, right? So the g will have to vanish on the plate, and it will have to vanish at infinity. Okay. And so why this is called method of images is that, of course, we consider there will be an image of Q, which we have to put somewhere, which actually does the magic trick for us, right? And so what the magic trick is that you say, well, OK, so I know my G will be given by G3, you know, corresponding to that charge Q. Well, this is our charge Q. But I need to add this harmonic part to that, right? And the way how I do that is that I imagine that the same charge is over here behind the plate. is it the same chance for minus I? Must be minus, right? Is it minus?
Yeah.
All right. If that is the case, and so then I subtract, and then I add, you know, the potential from this charge to the potential with that charge. So if I add them, that will make sure that the potential on this guy here is zero. Okay. Of course, these charges are at finite distance, so at infinity they don't screw up my boundary condition. So really, you know, if I put these charges here, I am, you know, making sure that the boundary condition is true. It's true here, and it will be true at infinity, right? But at the same time, you know, I know that, you know, the potential here, well, whatever, the green function corresponding to this charge will have a singularity. It will satisfy delta r minus r zero, but the charge is outside of the region which we're considering. We only consider the region to the left of the plate. So putting something behind the plate doesn't screw up. So really, you know, the green function coming from minus q will be harmonic on this side. There won't be any delta source because the delta source is to the right, right? And so, very good. So if I add these two, then I have a solution. So the solution will be equal to minus 1 over, why is it minus 1 over 4 pi r minus d. So that's from the charge q. And then plus 1 over 4 pi 1 over r plus d, which is from this image charge. Okay, so this guy, this is called image charge, and it's your trick how you solve your problem. You just introduce an image charge to the right of the plate. It doesn't screw anything to the left of the plate, but it provides you the harmonic function on the left. Right? And so that's your green function. And once you have that green function, you have your solution, phi of r. So from here, you have phi of r. And of course, this phi of r, well, it's given by a beautiful formula somewhere here. So it's g rho and whatever. So then we have dg over dn over the boundary. Does that contribute? Well, it doesn't contribute, right? Because on the phi is 0 on the boundary, so the boundary term is not there. So it's only given by g rho dv 0. And so this is your g. And so this is equal to 4 pi q g d and r. Okay. Question?
When you say harmonic function, like I keep on thinking, I don't know, back to like math classes and like second derivative of something is like equal to zero. What do you mean by harmonic?
Oh, very good. I mean that you solve this. So we have the, what is it called? Poisson equation, right? So this thing here, what we are dealing with is called Poisson equation. Laplace on phi is equal to some source, right? If you set the source equal to zero, then this is what is called like a harmonic equation or whatever. So you have Laplace on phi equals to zero. What I mean by harmonic function is that Laplace on h is equal to zero, right? So now we have like three different things, right? We have the full Poisson equation, this arbitrary source. We have the Green's function equation, where we put the source to be a delta-like source, one charge, right? And then we have also the harmonic equation, which means that Laplace on h equals to zero.
Okay, that makes sense.
Here. Thank you so much for correcting every mistake I make. Okay, that's great. I believe you. Okay, so you know the method of images is like very very powerful. So all you have to really do is like thinking, well, can I solve the problem by not doing any calculations? Just thinking, can I put some charges somewhere, imaginary charges, you know, image charges, so that I satisfy the boundary data, and so that the charges actually do not spoil, you know, the fact that I still have Laplace on phi on equals to, you know, whatever the charge I wanted at the beginning on in the region which I'm interested in, right? And so you will play with this in your tutorial today, and you will invent many, many more image charges for many more situations at the study. Okay? Yes?
Is there an algorithm to come up with image charges for any arbitrary surface?
I don't know. Is there?
I probably think it's more like an art that you're trying to invent. You know, of course, you can do the hard calculations, right? But sometimes you don't need to do the hard calculations, and
you know, this thing will work. All right, so you know, I just told you, if we can find the Dirichlet-Green function, we solved our problem. How to find the Dirichlet-Green function may not be simple, right? But there's a powerful method, you know, which works in simple cases. And if you are clever enough, you can actually, you know, come up with these, you know, image charges and, you know, construct this G basically for free. But it won't be for a general situation, of course. And then you have to do the hard work calculating G.
So if you didn't do any of the calculations that you just did in the past 15 minutes, you could have still done the image charge thing and said,
yes,
the potential is that. So I think that it's a little bit of overkill at this point.
Sure. No. Exactly. Well, in what sense? I showed you how to generally solve this problem, and I showed you how to do that in terms of the Green's functions. Okay. So what we will need to do is that we will need to discuss the Green function for the wave equation as well. And so this is like a preparation for that, if you want. So it's, yeah, but you are right. It's an overkill. I could have used this image chart to solve this problem. I could have used it immediately. Right? That's right.
Can you give an intuition as to why on adding minus q as the image charge, we'll get dou phi dou n 2 be 0 at the boundary?
Why at the boundary is 0?
We need to take the dou phi dou n term to be 0.
Well, we don't here because the phi is 0 on the boundary, right? That's what we are prescribing. You have a conducting plate where the phi is 0 on the conducting plate. So the second term will vanish no matter what you are doing.
In any Dirichlet problem, we have phi equal to phi naught at the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
That does not necessarily mean that phi dot will also be 0 on the boundary.
Yeah, but in this case it is. Yeah, I agree. So yeah, in general, it is not.
Wasn't the entire point of introducing an image charge was so that we could get phi dot equal to 0?
No. So the entire point of introducing minus q here was that we want to basically, you know, set the boundary conditions right. And the boundary condition, the important one, was that in the middle between, the phi is equal to 0, right? And so that's what fixed this minus q there, right? And so that was our prescription. We wanted phi equal to 0 here. If you wanted something else, we would have to do something else, right? But all right. So, you know, anyway, so let me just mess with your head. There's a black hole membrane paradigm, which is basically, I just say the word. It's basically doing very same thing. You want to understand physics of black holes, but you don't want to mess with the interior. Inside a black hole, inside the horizon, you can have weird things happening. But you can completely avoid that by saying, well, I put a membrane on, you know, above my horizon, and then I prescribe some physical properties to this membrane. I assign some charges and whatever. I provide it as a boundary data of what's happening outside of the black hole. And then I can predict any reasonable physics outside of the black hole by just saying, well, there's a membrane, there's some charge density, there is some viscosity, there's some fluid flowing on the membrane or whatever. And that tells you everything about the exterior physics outside of the black hole, right? So it's precisely like doing here. I am basically imposing some boundary data, and then, you know, I can forget about whatever is happening on the right-hand side here. So like putting the method of images on the other side, right? So instead of actually placing the somethings inside, I say I kill that by putting the right boundary data here. Right, so that's called membrane paradigm in black hole physics, and very interesting idea, very important one. All right, yes.
Question for the general solution. So for the first term, it's just like a convolution of the grain function with your source, right? But
mm-hmm.
like why, I guess intuitively I don't understand why the second term is there. Like,
oh,
it's probably some, like for me, I understand it's some background thing to normalize your...
In some sense, it is just the term which, you know, which makes sure that you solve the proper boundary data. Does it make sense? So you know, if you have arbitrary boundary data, well, you would get that thing over there, right? So now I'm using the fact that, you know, I have a special green function, and which tells me, you know, what kind of problem I'm considering. If you did consider Neumann problem, where you would be, you know, fixing derivative of phi on the boundary instead of phi, well, then you would like to actually kill, you know, the other term in that formula. Right, and so you could solve the Neumann problem as well, or you could solve some mixed problem where you have some, you know, mixed, I don't know, Robin boundary conditions, some mix of the phi and the d phi, and stuff like that, and so you could play with this, right? Yeah. All right. So that was electrostatics, but we solved a very complicated problem. We solved the problem. Do I still have Maxwell equations? I do. We solved the problem where we said, okay, very good. So we have arbitrary charge distribution, we have some region, and we prescribe some boundary data. So now we would like to do the same thing for the wave equation, but it will be too complicated for us, and we don't need to do that. We will just do the step one. We will construct the empty space green function. So if you have, like, you know, one charge, and then, you know, what are the possible solutions? What is the corresponding green function for the wave equation, for the full, you know, time-dependent problem, right? And I don't think I have time to do that today, but you will need it in your homework. So I will just give you the result, and then we can derive it in a week time or something like that.
Which homework problem will we need it for?
All of them.
Okay.
So now, let's return to the full dynamics. Return dynamics back. And so what we want to solve is your wave equation box on phi equals 2 minus 4 pi rho. Okay. And in principle, you know, you are still interested in, you know, the solutions of this thing here, but, you know, in the presence of boundaries and boundary data and all these things, right? But to simplify all ours, let's only do empty space. So we have only, you know, one charge, whatever, and then one charge can produce some electromagnetic waves and stuff like that. And you'll be interested in, you know, how to solve this equation for that one charge. And again, we will solve it in terms of the method of the Green's functions. So the statement is phi will be phi special plus phi homogeneous. This is a solution of box on phi homogeneous equals to 0. And this is a special solution, one special solution, if we can construct that, which satisfies this equation with the right-hand side, right? And that is a general solution for homogeneous function. So this will be the most general solution of our equation. And so now we will seek the special solution. Now this will be time-dependent. And we seek it as an integral over the Green's function again. It will be r prime, which was r0 before, and then t and t prime, 4 pi rho r prime t prime dr prime dt prime. Okay, so now we added, you know, the time dependence as well. So now our integral is four-dimensional integral. Yes.
In what sense is there a special solution on empty space? it, isn't every solution kind of homogeneous?
No. So, well, very good. It's an empty space, but I still have one charge or something like that.
Oh.
So yeah, it's empty everywhere except at one point. Okay. So this green function here, because it's empty and the space is homogeneous and isotropic, of course, this dependence on R and R prime will again be a function of only R minus R prime and the distance from that point which we start. Okay. So this will be G of R minus R prime, and similarly T minus T prime. And let's call that capital T, and let's call it capital R as before. And so our function really depends on, you know, how far away we are from the source, or how much later things happen. And the statement is that, you know, this solution will work if, you know, we again have the same equation imposed on our Green's function. So we will have box on G, R, and T equals to, I didn't put a minus sign here, so for in the notes I have a minus sign here. Must be always a miserable minus sign somewhere. All right. And so you can easily check that if this is true, then box on our phi s will satisfy this equation. All right. So if I do box on phi s, again, I can pull the box through the integral. It will be just acting box on g. That will be that. So I can integrate over dr prime and dt prime, and I get 4 pi rho. Right, so the same calculation as done before, but now with box instead of Laplace. So then, you know, we have that box on phi s equals to minus 4 pi rho. Right, so if we can solve this equation for our g, then that phi s will satisfy the equation which we want. Okay. Was a question or no? Everybody happy or everybody lost? That was happy or lost?
Lost.
Oh no! Oh no!
You gave us like the general idea of how to do it, but the fact that you didn't do it and we have to just take your word for it means, well, what are we supposed to say? It's just like, okay.
So what did I?
Oh, well, you didn't actually integrate out. You were just like, so we do this and that, and we get this, and we're like, okay.
No. So what I'm very good. So what I'm saying is that, you know, if you can find G satisfying that, right? If this is true, then this solution, well, then this integral here will satisfy my equation.
Okay.
Okay. Well, the proof is one line, right? So let's do it, right? So that's good that you ask, right? So we calculate delta phi s. Well, box on phi s. I pull the box through the integral. Is box on G, but box is in terms of, you know, R and T and whatever. It's not in terms of R prime and T prime. So the box only acts on G, right? Because everything else is a function of R prime, T prime, and whatever. So yeah. So 4 pi rho R prime, T prime, dr prime, T prime, right? But by definition, this box on G is minus delta function R minus R prime and delta function T minus T prime.
Okay, all good.
So now I can integrate over R prime, right? Just plugging everywhere instead of R prime, I plug R. Right? So this certainly gives me minus 4 pi rho R and T. Sorry, I wanted to skip this step, but yeah.
So in this case, where did the second term there go, like the bound?
Oh, very good. So very good. So I said, you know, here we only interested in the empty space, right? So here we are not doing step one, step two, step three. We are just doing step one. yeah, constructing empty space green function. So no boundary data whatsoever. So you know, in the same way as we did the green function in the step one, there was no boundary terms or anything like that. They you know, so it's just the step one, right? Seek. So this is the step one. And if you want, you know, we shouldn't be calling, well, this G is not a Dirichlet G or whatever. It's just the empty space G. Oh, okay. This is an empty space G. Okay. More questions? Yes.
Why have we written phi s, phi s plus phi h?
So the statement from PDEs or whatever is that if you have an equation, PDE equation, where you have non-trivial right-hand side, this is a linear differential operator acting on your phi, and then you have non-trivial right-hand side, the statement is the most general solution of this equation is given by just one solution, which you can guess or find or whatever, which satisfies this equation, plus the most general solution of the homogeneous part, where you say boson phi h is equal to zero, so there is a zero right-hand side. So, okay, so that's the statement of you know how to solve PDEs. Okay, so there will be one solution which satisfies a special satisfies you know this equation here. Let's call it box. Okay, and plus the most general solution which satisfies box on phi h equals. Okay, that's a statement.
If we wrote just phi instead of phi s in the Green's function equation, we will still get.
Okay, so you know the Green's functions are about finding like you know what corresponds to some small perturbations. You perturb something here, you put a point charge, and then you are asking things. So really, the Green's functions are good for finding you know the special solutions, for finding what happens in the presence of forces, right? So this special solution, you either guess or whatever, but there's a beautiful method how you can always do it, and that's the method of Green function. So this is how you find phi s, you can always find in terms of the Green function method. Okay? Phi h, on the other hand, can be pretty complicated, depending on what the differential operator is. Right? But there's no general method how you find the most general solution of you know differential operator acting on phi equals to zero. Basically, that's you know. But this one, the Green function method is amazing. The Green function method basically finds you the special solutions, one solution which solves you know the full PDE is the required right hand side.
In a certain coordinate system, when you say that if you just find the homogeneous solution once, you could apply it to all problems forever. I mean, so everywhere box of phi h is equal to zero, and you could have that. Problem that you have, so you could probably apply the answer to that to whatever the actual problem is.
Sure, if you can find it once, yes.
It should be.
Yeah. No. In case of the waves, it's simple, right? You have just waves, right? But you can have various kinds of waves, right? And so you need all kinds of waves. And you know maybe you can say I can decompose all the waves into the plane waves. That's fine. The plane waves form a basis of all the solutions. So maybe I can then write down the general wave as a sum over all plane waves and you know some Fourier transform or something like that, right? Yes.
Can we know because of the solutions that we have constructed continuity? Like properties of our solutions, because what we did with the delta function, it's something like we have a differential operator that regularizes the things that we put, like a delta function is something which is singular, and we are supposed to get electric and magnetic fields or solutions that are continuous.
Yeah. I
suppose. Is there a way to prove that from our expressions?
To prove that it's smooth and...
Yes, of the solutions.
Well, it will be provided that rho is sufficiently smooth, right? So you know, here I'm really, you know, I want to solve for arbitrary smooth distribution, charge distribution, and the statement is I can do that by, you know, an abstraction if you want. You're right. I like just put, you know, point like charge here, and if I can solve that, I'll get my G, and this G will give me the solution for the physical distribution of charges if you want. So it, yeah, it is. It works fine. Of course, you know, if you don't like Dirac delta function, well, you can smooth it out and you can consider some Gaussians and stuff like that. But in the end, you know, Dirac delta function is useful and it's simple, right? If you work with Gaussians, it's complicated. But sometimes you have to do it. But the abstraction of delta functions is good.
What I wanted to ask is, like, okay, we put a delta function, maybe we get something which is not a function but a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen, that our physical solution is a distribution instead of a...
Yeah, of course it can. Yeah. In general, it will be a distribution, right? But whether you can make it a normal function, if it's smooth enough, yes, you can. Okay, so very good. So now... It's good that the time is actually getting short here. So then there's a horrible calculation how to solve this equation. Okay, let's do this calculation next time. Okay, so that will take us an hour. But I'll give you the result, which you need for your homework. Okay, and then you probably know the result. So the result is the result of calculation, result of solving the equation for G, which is this equation here, right? So it's, I don't know how to call it, G equation. So this equation we have to solve, and we need to find what the G is, right? So solving equation G, and it's given by G equals to 1 over 4 pi r delta r minus t. So remember the G is a function of R and T. So what I really mean here is this thing here. It's like an absolute value of R, and similarly here, absolute value of R, R minus T. Okay, this is called beta. Okay, so now we have delta R minus T. So if you think about it, what this is doing is it actually, you know, expresses something like, you know, you have point charge, and then you are asking, you know, what kind of field I'm getting from that point charge. And so then if you do something with the point charge, then the green function will actually know about it at some later time. And the later time is like how long it takes from, you know, the electromagnetic wave to propagate from that point charge to your point where you study things. Okay. So this green function is called retarded green function. And retarded because it takes some time for the fields to know. If you shake your electron, then it takes some time before you know somewhere else. Okay, so retarded green function. Okay, and it is of course a solution of our equation G. However, surprise, surprise, there is another solution of this equation. And that is the advanced green function, 1 over 4 pi r, and that will be delta r plus t. Delta r plus t. And so this is a strange solution, because basically, you know, the field already starts changing, and then only after time elapses, then the electron actually, you know, produces that changing of the field, right? So this is like propagating backwards in time. So that's what the advanced green function displays. So this is the advanced one, and you can sort of think about it as propagation backwards in time. But both of them are solutions of this equation. If the mass does not lie, both of these solutions should be physical. But of course, nobody ever seen these advanced waves. nobody ever seen propagation vectors in time. Okay, so what people do in classical electrodynamics in Maxwell theory is they say, well, I've never seen this, so I don't consider this solution. Just scale by hand this solution. Yes? Well, as I say, so you would just see, you know, the disturbance produced, you know, somewhere, and then actually the source would produce this disturbance much, much, much later. Right? So yeah. So you know, people don't like that, right? And so they say, you know, in classical electrodynamics, you just throw away these solutions. So in classical electrodynamics, basically meaning Maxwell's theory, only retarded potentials are considered. Or retarded green functions, if you want, are considered. So only this guy here, and then you know GA thrown away by hand.
Ad hoc, some sort of ad hoc justification for that. You would say, yeah, I'm predicting advanced propagation, so backwards propagation in time. But because I don't see it, I just say it doesn't exist. And
yeah, exactly. That's what people do.
So you're just ignoring the mathematical result.
Exactly.
You should get rid of it, I think, in a mathematically justified way, not just throw it out of the paper.
I agree. But that's not what people do, right? So they say, well, we don't see retarded potential, advanced potential. So okay, so you know.
Einstein wrote his equation and predicted the, let's say, the precession of Mercury much more accurately than Newton, and they didn't find his predictions, and he would say, just throw that out, still my equations are right.
That's what he did. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
an example. Well, okay, let me comment on the next time, okay? Bye. Rho r prime t prime dr prime dt prime. All right, so that's our solution, right? It's this thing here. Small phi. phi r of t is that. And I say, well, I just take this, you know, retarded green function over here. But, you know, what this retarded green function is delta r minus r prime t minus t prime, right? So that's what capital T is and what capital R are. Now, r minus r prime and t minus t prime. Okay. So this thing here is delta r minus r prime. And then is a minus t minus t prime. The whole thing is delta divided by r minus r prime, and then 1 over 4 pi. Okay, so now you see that you can easily do the integral over dt prime. All right, if I do the integral over dt prime, then I can just use this delta function here, and everywhere I see t prime, I just plug t minus r minus r prime, okay? And so that's our solution, and that's called the retarded potential phi. So we have that this thing here, so phi of r and t is an integral. I still have the integral over the r prime, but now it will be rho evaluated at r prime, but now t prime, which is t minus r minus r prime, divided by r minus r prime, okay? And so this is your solution of the problem. And so that's a solution for the electrostatic potential phi. But of course, the same solution will be true for the vector potential phi, for the vector potential A, if I just replace rho with j. Right? So similarly, you can write A as r and t is dr prime j. Oh, let's write vectors now so that it looks beautiful. T minus r prime divided by r minus r prime. Okay? And so that will be the solution for the vector potential. So now in your homework, you will start with these expressions and calculate the electromagnetic radiation. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Very good. Questions? So as I say, I haven't shown you that these guys are solutions of this equation. We can derive them next time if you want to. Who wants to see the calculation? One hour calculation. Let's do it. Okay. Let's be tough and let's really fill all the holes, right? But anyway, so here I'm at least telling you this equation has these two solutions. You throw away by hand this solution here. And once you do that, this is your solution for your electrostatic potential and vector potential, the full solution of Maxwell equations. Okay, let me stop here.